The necessity of mental prayer. We've seen the subject from a variety of perspectives already, but just to get our bearings, first let's look at mental prayer in general. Mental prayer is prayer in which we use our own words in two different ways, either reflecting in God's presence to arrive at some knowledge we need, or in which we look at some truth of our faith in God's presence and are moved to sentiments of adoration, gratitude, petition, or mercy for sin. Mental prayer, therefore, is first of all mental, because technically it is not vocal. In vocal prayer, we use someone else's sentiments, someone else's words, and make them our own. In mental prayer, we do not depend on anyone else's ideas or sentiments, but they arise from within ourselves. And then, depending on what is the focus or the purpose of the mental prayer, it is either meditation, when the focus is on having our minds enlightened by God's grace, that's meditation, or where the focus is to have our wills inspired to praise, adore, love, thank, and beg from God. And then it is technically contemplation. All mental prayer, therefore, arises from within the person who prays. All prayer includes some meditation and some contemplation. No prayer is exclusively in the mind or exclusively in the will, but where the focus or the purpose, the stress in my mental prayer in us is on thinking so that my mind might be enlightened by God's grace, then it is, properly speaking, meditation, where my focus is to have my will inspired by God's grace to praise, love, thank, and beg Him, then it is contemplation. What in general are the two principal kinds of mental prayer? Besides what we've just described, namely meditation and contemplation, spiritual writers distinguish between regular mental prayer and spontaneous mental prayer. Regular mental prayer, by definition, is made regularly. There is a fixed time, a determined length. A definite method or form. And in religious communities, the church's mind is every rule of life of every community should prescribe regular mental prayer. In the Society of Jesus, over the centuries now since St. Ignatius, it has been 1 hour a day. Spontaneous mental prayer corresponds in general to what we commonly call aspirations. But more properly speaking, spontaneous mental prayer is that periodic, spontaneous talking with God whenever the occasion or the circumstances evoke it. Something either outside of me or something inside of me occasions, inspires, maybe just a momentary or a prolonged mental prayer. Strictly speaking, an aspiration is a form of vocal prayer where I use a definite, as we say, ejaculation or aspiration, my God help me, Lord make haste to help me, and aspirations are commonly indulged. Whereas spontaneous mental prayer may indeed use aspirations, but it is occasioned by something which I did not plan or maybe even expect. But when either something within me, a pain, or a temptation, or a trial, or as in my case, the telephone rings, and especially when there are certain people on the other side of the telephone, you engage in spontaneous mental prayer. And then all the factors or features that we described for mental prayer in general take place here in these spontaneous mental prayers. The two forms of mental prayer, the regular and the spontaneous, you might say are two sides of the same spiritual life. Regular mental prayer is to foster spontaneous mental prayer, and spontaneous mental prayer should encourage you just tell the Lord, Lord, I'm busy right now, but tomorrow morning I've got an hour. I'll go over this again and spend more time in more detail. Now to zero in on our subject, necessity. The moment we distinguish between meditation and contemplation as forms of mental prayer and between regular and spontaneous mental prayer, we can distinguish four kinds of necessity. In other words, each of these four forms of mental prayer is necessary in the spiritual life and with emphasis in the religious life. First, regular mental prayer. Spiritual writers, not the least of whom was Teresa of Avila, say that it is regular mental prayer that principally identifies religious life, where you have opportunities for regular mental prayer. The life of a religious should be regular. In other words, it should be regulated. In other words, the Latin word for rule is regula. What principally identifies the life of a person consecrated to God? And when I speak of religious life, I am using the term in the way in which the Second Vatican Council used the word in Lumen Gentium, remember, in the sixth chapter. Fifth on the universal call to holiness, sixth on religious life, which is the Church's language in this context for consecrated life. Whether the person's consecration is in community life, or a secular institute, or what the new code of canon law will for the first time in the Church's history give us, apostolic associations, including lay people who are living a consecrated life. Last night from 8 to 10, I spoke in Rockville, Maryland, to 140 consecrated lay people living out in their own state of life some degree of regularity. I want to stress this. Regularity. Certain things are done with a periodicity which then becomes part of the rule of life, where rule means regular, where rule means regulation. All we did in English was shorten the three-syllable Latin word, regula, rule. What's the necessity there? Without regular mental prayer, there is no consecrated life. What about the necessity for spontaneous mental prayer? The necessity here partakes of the necessity of divine grace. In other words, it is not enough to be in the state of grace. We also need, besides sanctifying grace, we need the constant influx of actual graces, which the Church's teaching defines as transient, supernatural illuminations of mind and inspirations of will. Transient, supernatural illuminations of mind and inspirations of will. The Church says it is not enough to be in the state of grace, to remain in that state of grace, to grow in that state of grace. We also need actual graces, and the plural is always used. What does spontaneous mental prayer do? It obtains for us those transient, necessary, periodic, divine illuminations of mind and inspirations of will. And in order to obtain what we need, we must pray. Why then is spontaneous mental prayer necessary? Because actual graces, as illuminations of mind and inspirations of will, are constantly needed. And the necessity corresponds to the gravity of the need. The more grave my need, the more I have to have grace. And that means the more I must pray. More in terms of frequency, more especially in terms of intensity. So much for the first two kinds of mental prayer and their necessity. Now, these necessities on the four levels will necessarily overlap. But at least it helps me in lecturing on the subject to break the subject into four pieces. We now wish to look at the other two forms of mental prayer, all from two other viewpoints, as meditation and as contemplation, where the purpose of meditation is that the mind might be enlightened, where the purpose of contemplation is that the will might be inspired. Why do we need meditation? You will notice immediately that both regular and spontaneous mental prayer can be either meditation or contemplation. Are we clear? We're just using different terms to cope with a large, complex subject. A saint like John of the Cross, in his spontaneous mental prayer, would, as we know from his writings, regularly make acts of contemplation. Others who are not so advanced in the mystical life will engage in, say, spontaneous meditation. In any case, the necessity. I find four reasons why mental prayer as meditation is necessary. First, in order to know what God wants. Now, this is a general need that we all have. This is not yet the second kind of necessity that we're going to talk about in a moment. It is not yet what God wants of me. It is just to know what God wants. Unless we practice mental prayer as meditation, we will become slaves of human wills. Slaves of either our own will or of the wills of other people. And I'm not sure which is worse, to be a slave of my own will or the slave of someone else's will. We need to practice meditation to know that there is a will towering above and undergirding all other wills. And because these human wills are free, they can go counter to the divine will. Take the tragic story of King Herod, remember? When he had John the Baptist in prison, didn't know what to do with him. He was uncomfortable with what John was telling him, to put away his wife, who was not his wife. Then remember, the daughter danced before Herod. He was pleased, and he made the stupid promise. Tell me what you want. Even one half of my kingdom, I will give it to you. The girl ran to her mother, and the mother said, tell Herod, you want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. That was a human will. And Herod, having made a vain promise under oath, was too proud to take it back. In order to satisfy a human will, he disobeyed the divine will. And going further back to the very beginning, Eve took the forbidden fruit. We don't have the dialogue recorded between Adam and Eve. Adam must have said, Eve, do you know what you've done? Yes, dear Adam, I did it. Here, have some. But Eve, we're not supposed to eat of this forbidden fruit. Dear Adam, do you love me? It's your wife, Eve, who is asking. Adam, yes, I know you're asking. But I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't do it. And he does it. The first and towering necessity of mental prayer is to keep us conscious of the fact that there is a divine will in the world to which all other wills should conform. And for a lot of people, this is the most important thing they lack in their lives. All they can think of is what either they want or what others want, not realizing that God has a will. Secondly, in terms of necessity, to know what God wants of me. In other words, in meditation, I reflect on my own life, the things that, given my state of life, what God expects of me. Given my age, given my state of health, given my talent, given my responsibility. Third, ground of necessity, to know why God wants something of me. In other words, mental prayer provides the motives for doing what God wants. Why? Does God want something of me? Because He wants me to show Him that I love Him. Or He wants me to give Him honor and praise by sacrifice. Sacrifice of something that I naturally like, which I give up. It takes mental prayer to convince me of why God wants something of me. And finally, for meditation, to know how I am to do God's will. Why mental prayer is meditation? Notice the focus. To know. To know what? To know how I am to do what God wants me to do. Because it's not enough to know what God wants, or even wants of me, or why He wants, whatever He wants. The hardest question for many of us is to know, Lord, how am I going to cope with this problem? Did I tell you about my experience last Saturday morning? Remember?
Oh, coming, walking.
The taxi didn't come, the limousine wasn't there. I was supposed to get to the airport. Distance, 2 miles. So I started walking. I was always a short distance. I had less than a half an hour. A truck driver delivering newspapers, remember that was last week?
Yes.
He picked me up. I climbed. He helped me to climb into a big truck. I don't think they'd ever done that before. Drove this big truck in front of the airport. The taxi drivers were lucky. What's coming out of that truck? And for good measure, he gave me a newspaper. Well, this Saturday, I had a similar episode. I didn't want this to happen again. I didn't have my ticket yet. And I had exactly 30 minutes from the hotel to getting on the plane. So I asked the man at the desk, how can I get to the airport? He says, you walk. Or you get a taxi. And there's the telephone. So I ran over to pick up the telephone. A sleepy voice asked me, where do you want to go? I want to go to the airport. So, he asked me, where are you? I was distracted. I gave him the wrong name. It's the wrong hotel. So as I hung up, there I was. I didn't dare call him up again. So I took my bags, ran to the door, and looked to see where the airport was. 2 miles, not in sight. 28 minutes. So I started walking. In my hurry to get to the airport, I went up the wrong street. As I turned down it, I figured, well, I'll have to call up. Sister Catherine saying, sorry, I missed my plane again. As I was running back to get on the right road, I saw a taxi. So I waved, stood in front of the taxi. He had nobody in. So I got into the taxi, said, I want to go to the airport. You're going in the wrong direction. He said, I know. So as we were driving the 2 miles to the airport, he said, Father, I'm so pleased to know that, you know, that I can give you a lift. So I asked him, what's your name? He said, Jack Gaffney. And Father, let me tell you, my regular job is not driving a taxi. I just lost my job with a mutual network. Got three children. He lost an important job with the television business. So before he dropped me at the airport, he said, Father, I'm a good Catholic. So I gave him my name and address in New York. He's going to write to me, and I'm going to find him a job. Would you say a prayer for Jack Gaffney? Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. He said, Father, this, if you get me a job, that'll be a miracle. You lose your way. I'm looking for customers. All right. What are we saying? To know what I am or how I am to do God's will. All the while, I was praying mental prayer called meditation number 4. Lord, how am I going to get to the airport? Does this make sense? God does marvelous things. Now, the necessity of mental prayer is contemplation. Why do we need mental prayer is contemplation? First of all, to adore God. The trouble with a word like necessity is that we're so accustomed to thinking of necessity in terms of meeting our own needs, we are liable to forget the highest form of necessity in prayer is not what we need, but what God wants. The highest form of prayer is not meeting our needs. That's a necessity, all right. Now, this partakes of mystery, that something may be necessary, but notice, necessary for us not to meet our need, but to satisfy God's want. What God mainly wants of us is to adore Him. Adore Him in submission. Adore Him in love. God gains nothing by our acts of adoration, praise, and honor. But He wants it. Why? Because He wants us to recognize who He is, our Creator and Lord, and He wants us to tell Him we love Him because He has been so incredibly good to us. So much then for necessity. Now something about practicality. How to teach or train people in the practice of mental prayer. I have 5 recommendations. First, in order to teach the practice of mental prayer, people should learn the principles of mental prayer. In other words, what is mental prayer? Distinguish different kinds of mental prayer, because you will need it since people differ so much. There are some people, saintly souls, that I know, who for all practical purposes, all their lives, never or almost never practice what we call contemplation. It is meditation. So the principles of mental prayer. that we have somewhat gone over in our class so far. Secondly, people should be introduced to various methods of mental prayer. In other words, there ought to be some kind of a system, because whatever else mental prayer is, it is the single most important spiritual habit that a person should cultivate if he or she wants to grow in sanctity. Teresa of Avila puts it very bluntly. Do you want to become holy? Yes. Practice mental prayer. The more effective you are in practicing mental prayer, the more holy you will become. Much mental prayer, much holiness. Little mental prayer, little holiness. No mental prayer, no holiness. This is especially important for active, and the more active a person is, the more they must be trained in sound methodology. Otherwise, their prayer will be mainly, almost exclusively, vocal, which is good, but it is not enough. That's why in her last general chapter, Mother Teresa asked the chapter delegates to approve. These are the active communities that already had 1 hour of community prayers each day, to add and make prescriptive 1 hour of added mental prayer each day, and that's for the active community. I fear, she said, what's happened to so many women's communities is going to happen to mine where the Lord takes me. The instinctive generosity of a woman, when she sees need, she wants to meet it. And they spend themselves in serving others, and they forget about God. In any case, method. How? This is not easy, and I know because of my own, well, I would call it stupid in anybody else, traveling, mobility. I have got to practice and have a method, a system of mental prayer. Otherwise, you just don't do it. Too many demands on your time. Too little energy. You're dead tired at night. You've got to budget yourself. Close the telephone. Go somewhere. Do something in order to be alone with God. Third, practice. The common saying, practice makes perfect, is especially pertinent here. This means, especially with the person who is younger or still inexperienced in the spiritual life, to try out various ways. Different people have different approaches to God. And this is where the one training others must often be a pupil, him or herself. People do differ. God's grace is different with different people. I may not be particularly an intellectual. A person that I'm dealing with, clearly, is always thinking in abstract terms, analyzing, dividing, distinguishing everything in sight. What kind of mental prayer does that person need? Let him try this or try that. And here's a strange thing I found. Often the highly intellectual people, for whom you would think a simple gospel meditation would be hard to make, actually find a quiet reflection on, say, the scene at Bethlehem, relaxing. They enjoy it. Some people are so used to driving their minds that they think that God wants that of them when they pray. Take it easy. No speeches. You're not making an address to God. In any case, practice. And I would suggest the less developed a person's spirituality is, the more the person needs to practice. And even though the last thing that a person might want to be doing at a certain time, remember in our novitiate, we had a flexoria. After 2 years, nobody could quite figure out why we called it flexoria. All we knew is that the Latin flexoria has something to do with bending, and we were supposed to be kneeling if possible during the half hour of additional mental prayer each day, plus 15 minutes for good measure to read Thomas a Kempis. So, 5 o'clock. 5 to 5, the flexoria bell would ring. No matter where we were, supposed to assemble. You're hungry. The meal is not until 6 o'clock. The last thing you want to do is to be alone with your stomach at 5 o'clock. But you read Thomas a Kempis. You rub your eyes to keep awake. Then another bell and you kneel down. And you know, after we finished the novitiate, and we didn't have to make the flexoria, we felt kind of guilty if we didn't do it. I've been making a flexoria ever since. In other words, you get into certain good habits. Now, good habits are not always pleasant. But at first, may be hard. In time, becomes easier. Fourth recommendation on the how. Adaptation. This covers a variety of forms. It means that the one training others adapts him or herself to the people you're training. If you don't know how to deal with that type of person, read a book. Call somebody up. I remember my spiritual father, as we called him, during my teaching in Cincinnati as a scholastic. Father McGeary, his name was. He said, I just got a person to counsel who, as far as I can tell, is a mystic. He taught this priest, taught astronomy all his life. He said, I know nothing about mysticism.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.